Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life, Love in Full Enlightenment. Tonight we have our co-hosts, A. Michelle Grogan, Janet Hurd, Sky Vaughn, and special guest co-host Debbie Applewhite, and I'm Minister Dupree Aldrich. How's everyone out there tonight, ladies?
Great, wonderful.
Minister.
So, tonight we're talking about meeting in love as deeply as you've met yourself. How love has the power to heal trauma, how we can heal our traumas and our past hurts and pains, and even some of the existing things that are going on in our lives through the power of love and a true and genuine application of love to one another. We're going to open up. I'm going to let you know that everybody's mic is open. So if you have too much noise going on in the background, you can mute your own phone. And when you want to ask a question or when you have something to say, you can just unmute yourself. We tend to give out our area code and the last four digits of our number, or you're free to give out your name. Everything here, this is a safe space, and we like to keep it that way so we're respectful but very open and candid in our discussions. So we want to open up tonight, and we want to talk a little bit about what exactly trauma can be and how broad trauma can extend. If one of you ladies, one of the co-hosts, want to start on that, I'd appreciate it. Do I have to call the name, or either one of you can start out on it? Sky, why don't you open up and let's talk about?
Exactly. We talked about that a little bit before the show. It can be anything from childhood trauma, anything from job loss, loss of just different losses in life in general. It's not just childhood. It's not just abuse all the time. It's not mental health issues all the time. It can be any type of trauma, anything that a life-changing trauma that kind of knocks you off balance, I guess that's the best way to put it, that knocks you off balance and you have to come back to yourself and work back towards yourself. So, like, it could be anything that affects you that way.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody have anything they want to add to that? Okay. So one of the things that we do want to address, and we want to address it from both sides, we're not saying that it's an easy experience. We're not saying that You're not going to grow weary and tired in the process. What we're saying is that when you get into committed relationships and when you say that you love someone, there are going to be times when you're going to walk on glass along with them. And there are going to be times when you'll be bandaging hands and feet. I don't mean that literally. I mean that symbolically. There are going to be times when you're going to just have to be a listening ear and listen to your partner and what they're going through, with them knowing that they can be open and honest with you about it and know that they're safe. No one actually wants to walk into their what is supposed to be their safe haven, which is your home and your relationship, and find out that you're in just as much danger there as you are outside of those two things that I spoke to. So we want to talk a little bit about that, and we want to address that and some of the ways in how you can handle that and how you help one another and how you can love one another through that whole process. We're going to, before we do that, before we start talking, we want to know if anybody out there has any kind of particular question with regard to how you can work through some of the trauma, or if anyone has anything out there that they want to say about some of the trauma that they're experiencing or their partner or a friend may be experiencing that they're trying to love and care and support through. Before we kind of go into that. It always takes you guys some time to get yourselves warmed up before you feel all right to talk. We want to talk a little bit about meeting in love as deeply as you've met yourself. And I know a lot of people saw that title and said, what does that mean? And so we're going to let the panel tackle that, and then we're going to bring in the audience. So when I said meeting in love as deeply as you've met yourself, what first came to your mind, Janet?
I guess the first thing that came to my mind is that my ideal of love and my depth of love as it related to myself. Sometimes you have people that they know what they need, they know what they want and they desire, and love is something that they want. They just want to be loved and they just want to feel love, but at the same time, they don't quite know how to give that back because that's something that they have not yet gotten to know of themselves. For example, they could have grown up in a situation or had a past history of being told that, you know, you're nothing, or you know, you're never going to be nothing, you're never going to amount to anything, or anybody going to want you because of this and that and the other. So those type of things that a person came up believing or sees that was planted in them, they probably never get to a point or to a place in their life where they actually feel love or even loving themselves that way. So basically it's like, you know, meeting someone that you want to love you, but yet still you can't not give them the love. Okay, this is not coming out right, but I'm not explaining it the way that I feel it. So basically you want to be able to give back, you know, that love that you desire, or you're not, and some people are just not capable of doing that. It's not equal. Okay, I'm leaving alone because I feel like I'm rambling. I'm not making myself clear like I feel it, so next.
Well, you know what? This is Debbie.
Go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to kind of piggyback a little bit on what Janet just said. I agree with her in some aspect, and when you're saying that some people are not capable, and I mean speaking for myself in certain things, I don't think it's out there not capable. I mean, it coming when you've had or dealt with a lot of trauma, there's a wall that's up. And I read something earlier which was kind of interesting where, well, I saw something where it says, you know, this wall is up. It's not there. We put a wall up, and the person who puts that wall up you know, they've had it up there to protect them, but they're waiting on someone when Trump factors in who they feel is loving enough who will want to tackle that wall. So if you know what I mean, if I said that right, the trauma, there's like five different emotions that you go through, and with dealing with in a relationship, you know, if you're one of the person, well, if you're that person that has been traumatized for so long, you know, you go through these various steps, and until you can come to an acceptance and grieve the passing of that trauma, it's hard. It's really very hard. But it is a process, and I think it can be done, even if you felt, like Janet said earlier, well, if you've been raised up or in an environment where you're always told that you're never going to amount to anything, or, you know, you're never going to be anything. I think it's just meeting that person who's willing to climb over that wall, because that's how I feel, that's what that wall is up there for. There's a lot of people who attempt, but then they get to a point where it's like, you know, I'm done. And, you know, a person who's been traumatized, that's what they've dealt with all the time.
Right. Well, and you have to, and we have to understand, no matter what side of the fence we're on of that, whether we're the person who has been through trauma or we're the person trying to love someone through their trauma, we have to understand that anyone who has been traumatized and for a very long time, and or there are general there have been generations of trauma in their family, or they keep running into people that keep showing them just how cruel humans are capable of being, they don't want to become vulnerable. And they don't want to trust. And, yeah, you do. You have to work a little harder to gain that trust. You have to be able to stay in there a little longer so that they can feel comfortable enough, or I call it they can become soft and pink around you, and allow themselves to be vulnerable around you, and because they have to learn how to trust again. And so, again, it's not for the faint at heart, because, you know, it will really test whether or not you truly love and deeply care enough for that person to support them through something, because sometimes it can come out in very harsh and hard ways towards you. Mm-hmm. So we have to put that out there for them that, you know, they don't have a vulnerability, and they don't want to trust in. Because they're waiting, if you hold your hand out, they're waiting for you to yank it back or hit them with it, because that's what has always happened in some way and sometimes in some shape or form. And, again, I don't mean in literal ways. I'm speaking symbolically, whatever their trauma is. You know, some people wake up and say, let me get up and see what's going to happen to me today, because, you know, every day just seems to be a bad day, because something happens to them in a way that affects them in a way that kind of knocks them down in a way that they feel like they can't get up, and they look around and nobody's reaching out a hand to help lift them up. So you have that going on, and there are people out there, and they need love just like everyone else mm-hmm. needs love, and they want love. They just don't know how to receive it at some times. And so when you enter into a relationship with someone like that, you have to be prepared for some time for them to pull back, to get into corners and, you know, push you away, because you're getting close and that's making them vulnerable, and you have to continue to love them through that, because love does have healing properties. Anyone out there in the audience have any questions, have anything they want to say thus far from what we said? We're talking about meeting in love as deeply as we've met ourselves, how to love and heal through the traumas, help one another through the trauma. Anyone? I know you're out here because I'm looking at you. Before I start reading the
Hello?
Stuff that people are sending. Mm-hmm.
So I hear what you guys are saying, and I hear that you're saying that we have to love them through the trauma, but what does that look like? I mean, if you're really trying to help someone with their trauma and they have all these walls filled up and you're trying to help them climb over the wall or tear it down, whichever the case may be, I guess I'm trying to envision, what does that look like? What is that person really doing? What does this love look like?
Well, anybody want to tackle that? Or?
Yeah, this is Skye. It goes back to, I want to piggyback what you said, Minister, about relationships and the work of a relationship. When you're in a relationship, a lot of times we talk about doing the work. I've asked people this question, and they come back with, when I ask, what does the work mean? They'll say things like not being insecure, making sure each other don't cheat, you know, and things like that. And I have to come back there. It's much deeper than that. We have, in a committed relationship, you have a responsibility to each other to create an environment where you can become vulnerable. So to your question, what does it look like? When a person has been traumatized, it brings on all sorts of behaviors, you know, and they look different ways. They shut down, behaviors that are really going to bug you, but you're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to go in and say, I'm going to be here. Nobody's saying you sit somewhere and be abused. That's not what we're saying, but the work of a relationship is paying attention, being patient, noticing, not flying off the deep end when your partner does something that irritates you. Try to look at it through love instead of just being irritated and lashing out. Just kind of sit back and watch and kind of understand, okay, she's been through this or she's going through that, and let me just be patient and let her be in her space, and then talk about it later and say, you know, this happened. So no matter what it looks like or come through, you have to commit to being patient and listening, you know, and just be loving. Approach it through love instead of anger and reacting. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Does that answer that? Okay.
And also one of the things, as I was saying earlier, your home is your safe haven. And if there's nowhere else, you know, you can feel safe where you live. Your shelter should have a sense of safeness to it. So you don't want to come home to constant arguments. You don't want to come home to constant put downs. You don't even want to come home and feel like when you get there, everyone left everything for you to do. That's just one more rock thrown in that bag that you're carrying. So, you know, we want to help one another out in the homes, and we want to make the home feel like a safe place. We don't want to make our partners or the person who is in trauma feel as though they want to wait until everyone is asleep to come home, because then it's safe. They won't have anything to deal with. They don't have to explain why they're not smiling or why they're smiling or any of that stuff. You want to be able to come home and become naked. In your relationship, you want to have a sense of nakedness. You don't want to have to run and hide and cover yourself. And that's what I mean by a safe shelter. You want to have a sense of nakedness, that you can completely expose yourself, and I don't mean that in a perverse way, completely expose yourself to your partner and know that you'll be safe and you'll be all right for doing so. You want to know that those things that you're sharing with your partner is just between you and your partner, unless you're sharing that you're trying to hurt yourself or something of that nature. But other than that, they should be able to say things to you that's not going anywhere. And better yet, that's not going to be used when you're having words against you. So that's one of the ways and one of the looks that you, you want to have. And I hope we address the question, part of the question. Listening and talking to one another, even when you're getting frustrated with one another about the situation or the conversation, you still have to be able to listen and talk. You have to be able to grin and grit your teeth past the faces that they're making that may just be getting on your last nerve. Those are all mechanisms of coping. And we can't tell people how to fix their faces or how their body language should be. What we should be keen on is whether or not they hear us, not how they're hearing us, but whether or not they're hearing what's being said and whether or not they feel free enough to be able to say what they need to say in order to get over, to get past, and to get through what it is that they're experiencing at the moment.
Yeah, they want to be heard. And so you create that vulnerable space for them without let them be who they are and experience what they're experiencing without consequences, without judgment, without criticism. You know, you're going to be triggered. It's going to trigger you. Things they say or do, or the things that you say or do to them. It's not just one-sided. We all have our different things. But the best thing you can try and do is not react. Immediately just kind of sit back and grit your teeth, like the minister said, and just kind of listen and let be their soundboard and hear them. And as time goes on, as you create that environment and you guys get in that groove of being that for each other, that's when healing happens. That's when the healing is happening. And then you'll be able to just flow better, you know, as time goes on.
You know, and then I want to start hearing from some of you, so I'll throw one more thing out there, and then I want to hear from some of the listeners that are out in the audience so that we can really give some stuff out instead of us just, you know, putting information out. We want to address any thing or any concerns you want to say. And we also want to hear what you're thinking with regard to what we're putting out and what's being said. But another good way, another good look for when you're supporting and you're promoting your partner through their trauma and you're loving them through it, you have to give assurance. You have to give them some assurance, you know. You have to express or show, when they're showing any signs of being depressed or they're feeling guilty about something or they become angry about something, because a lot of times we as humans tend to feel guilty about the things that we're going through that we may not have even had any control over that happened, but we feel bad about it and we feel guilty about it, but we can give them assurance that the feelings that they have are normal. You know, I understand you have every right to feel. Sometimes that's all it takes for a person to start coming out of some of their trauma, to let them know you have the right to be angry about what you're angry about. I'm not going to tell you that you don't have that right to be angry, because you have every right for that anger. You know, some of the things you assure them of that it's okay for them to have, then now there are some things you don't want to assure them, and you don't want to assure them in things that are going to do harm to themselves or harm to others. But there are some things we can assure the people that we're trying to love through. And we don't mean, this doesn't just end with just intimate relationships. We're talking about friendships. Because we've kind of broken away from true sisterhood and true relationships with friends also. So, you know, you have to assure them through some of the things that they're going through that it's all right. Your feelings are all right. Your feelings are valid. And for some people, that's enough to give them hope to be able to take just another step towards that healing. Because, see, once again, they have to build and grow on that trust and that love, being able to accept your love, being able to accept that caring that you're giving to them. They have to be able to pull back to that because, you know, right now they're feeling very broken. And most things that are broken can be repaired. So, and we're not saying that you can repair them. What we're saying is that we love one another through self-repair. Because remember, this is meeting in love as deeply as you can meet yourself. Because the work is not just for your partner to do, with them supporting you and loving you through it, but those of us in trauma, we have work to do too. And here you are, we're coming with your support now. So you know that you don't have to do it alone. You're not alone in it. So let's hear from some of the people in the audience. Any questions or anyone has a statement about what has been said thus far?
I just joined the line. Can someone
Welcome.
Hear me?
Yes.
Hi. My name is Comfort from Chicago, just to introduce myself.
Hey, okay. Comfort.
Oh, hi. I didn't hear, so I just joined the line, so I'm about 20 minutes late. But what you said was beautiful, and it resonated with me. And I guess I think I know the answer, but it's always good to have discussion. But what you were saying about self-love first, because you can't really require someone else to have it first before you can have it. You have to start off that way. And I recently was in a struggle myself, breaking up from a toxic relationship in the midst of losing a parent and moving. A lot of big things have happened. And because I was in a hurtful place with grieving, I lost my job, I lost my home, and I lost my mother in a span of 3 months. And, you know, I was just whatever the lowest of low is, that's where I was. And in my low period, you know, I drew a person to me that I thought would help my healing, but I knew it was all superficial. And it ended up almost hurting me deeper or even more, because I know why that person was drawn to me, because of, you know, when you're low, you draw low people. I think you meet people at your level as it is. And over time, I began to heal out of it, but, you know, whomever I brought into my life, that's who they are. I don't mean to change anybody. I poured that in there. So the difficulty was separating myself from this. And it wasn't too difficult. After a while, I knew it was toxic and bad for me. You know, it's still a breakup. I'm healing from my parents. But I wonder, I say, am I loving myself enough? How can you heal from loss? I guess my question is, I shouldn't even try to be in a relationship, but I don't know how much time it would take to heal the loss of a parent and all of the other things that I've been through. I guess I'm just expressing. I don't really particularly have a question. I'm in a transition period of my life, and I'm just trying to stay steady without cracking up, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not just the trauma of my mother, but a breakup, a job. I have a new one, a home. I have a new one. So it's turning slowly. But it's the emotional pain that humans do. You can get another job. You can get more money. Can't get another parent. But I don't know. It's the life of living with a person, another person. So all the posts and listening, this is healing. Like you said, womanhood and sisterhood, how deeply important it is to just have some support, even if it's from strangers, to know I don't have to deal with this alone. And what I've recently started to learn is that it doesn't always have to be intimate, romantic love. Just love from other people can heal me out of that. I just want to share.
Thank you for,
Thank you
sharing.
For sharing. Thank you all.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
Yeah. Copper, I just lost someone very special to me about it's gone on 7 months now. And my brother, we were just told that he has probably 6 weeks to live, leukemia that he's had. And my mom is suffering from dementia. So it's a lot, like you are going through. Loss and things like that. If there's no timetable to grieving, I'm finding that out with my own loss. There's, you know, what I'm realizing now is there's not going to be a point in time where it's ever going to go away. We're going to have to. It'll get a little bit less, but it's going to be there. We're going to learn how to flow with that as time goes on. But it's going to take time. It's just going to take time, and you're just going to have to be easy with yourself and let that energy move through the way it has to move through. But as far as bringing someone into your life, you're right. In times like this, I'm an energy medicine practitioner, and you're right when you said when you're at a very low point, you tend to attract. It's, a lot of times you will attract those types of people in, and it never turns out good. You know, like that. So you do want to be careful and just recognize that where you are and what you're bringing in might be a product of that. So you have to be careful and just work on bringing yourself back up, your vibration back up, so you can meet a good energetic match for you. But it's all just going to take time. And just be gentle with yourself and let it move through you and flow through you, and you'll come back to you.
Yes, and I was going to say, you know, you spoke of, and both you and Sky, you're speaking of some great trauma that's going on in your life at this period. And one of the things I would say is to be able to take time to be very still so that you can hear your inner self speaking. Because sometimes your inner self is trying to help you with discernment, not just with regard to others, but discernment with yourself and where you're going and where you're taking yourself, and also with who you're bringing into your space when you are at a point of being in a state of, I call it dis-ease. I never say disease. Mm-hmm. In a state of dis-ease where the body, the mind, the soul, the spirit is not at ease at the moment. So, and as Sky was saying, energy at that time is very important. So you have to do a lot of, whether it's meditating, whether you pray, whether you do cleansings, whether you do dancing, whether you do whatever it takes that will bring you to a state of calmness where what's going on around you continues to move, but you're sitting still in it, and it all kind of slows down so that you can see what's happening. If those of you out there understand what I mean about what I'm saying at the moment, because there is a place that you can put yourself into where there are things that are moving slower around you, where you can see. So if it's nothing more than taking time out to go and do some breathing practices so that you can center yourself, because when we go into trauma, we become out of balance, and we have to get ourselves back into balance.
I think that's how I'm feeling. I'm very vulnerable and open and kind of raw, even though my mother passed a year ago and I removed this person in New Year's, in January, you know, and it's a breakup, so it's a bond that has to be broken, and I'm going through it, and you know how your mind say, no, don't, you know, go back, and then the person is not leaving me alone, but I can't blame them because I'm not making them leave me alone. But I know, you know, when I get weak or vulnerable, I feel like I need someone. My mother's gone. Intellectually, I know that this is a toxic situation, but emotionally, I don't know how to be. I can say that out loud, but I think I just said it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, when I was with this person, I didn't feel better out of the situation. It was just drama and back and forth and drama. But, you know, I know it takes time. I've broken up with people before. I know how to do it or how it goes, but I've never felt so imbalanced. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And some time has gone by now. It's been about 3 or 4 months. And just when you feel like you're getting your footing or steady, mm-hmm. then it's a call of how you doing, and I miss you, and I know we've been through it, and we're right on the edge. And I used to be strong enough to say, you know, no, hell no, go. But I'm just like, oh, well, maybe. Even though, like I say, logically, there's nothing there but trauma and hell. So I guess that's why I need to hear you all. Like, say it back to me.
Yeah, being okay. That you know that that is what that space is for you, again, mm-hmm. that's one of those moments where you can sit still and watch it slowly move around you. Sometimes you could see that number and don't pick up that phone so you can hear mm-hmm. those words that will trigger your desire to just reach out for something, because you're feeling so alone at some point that, you know, well, as toxic as it may be, it's at least temporary comfort until I know to hang mm-hmm. up the phone. And we're saying find different support than that. Find the support that's going to lift you up out of that and hold you up out of that state and that feeling. Because as you're stated, you're coming out of it. You found another mm-hmm. job and you have somewhere else to stay. And, you know, those types of material and those things of that, like you can't get your mother back or things like that. But, you know, find something that will help continue to support you and love you past this until you're no longer off of your feet, you're up to your knees. When you can become, when you can get off of your knees and kind of stand what your body has bent over, like a Raggedy Ann doll. And as you start to bring yourself upright, you'll feel that love and that caring and that concern, that support system that you have brought around you, that's giving you that genuine love, that's giving you that powerful energy, mm-hmm. is holding you. And now you woke up one morning and they're just standing beside you and you're holding yourself up. And that's mm-hmm. the place where that love, how that love heals, and how that support of loving people around you with no ulterior motive other than just mm-hmm. to want to love you and want to support you and want to care for you is in your life and around you. And that's what we're talking about, and that's mm-hmm. what we're trying to get everyone to, with regard to meeting in love as deeply as you met yourself. Because the love that we can give out is no more than the love that we have within, as we said earlier. And so that love can be grown. That love can be cultivated. We talked about the gardens last week. We need to cultivate our gardens. And those who are in partnership with us, may it be a friend or an intimate partner, they need to get out and pick up that hoe and carry those water buckets and mm-hmm. sprinkle that water and put down that fertilizer with us, right along with us, because we're trying to grow together. And when one is weak, the other's strong. You know, we're never going to be in the same place at the same time. It just doesn't work that way. That's just not life.
Thank you all.
take comfort. This is Debbie, and
hi.
I wanted. Hi, how you doing? My condolences and blessings to you.
You.
I have a question for you, because I know where you're at in terms of losing a parent. But my question is, have you allowed yourself to really grieve? Because it's no time limit to that, and it seems to me that, I mean, I've been in a place and I've had several losses back to back. And there's a stage of denial where you don't, you're just not accepting that loss. And like I said, there's no time limit on that. And when you push yourself out there, you allow other things without addressing that. And you have to give yourself time to actually grieve. And there's like five stages that you go through. I mean, you know, you've got the denial, and then you've got the anger, and then you allow yourself things that you do things that you don't normally do, or you know that's not right, but you're in such a place. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I think my mother passed in April, so this month made a year, and I met this person by June, and I never felt so desperate to grab onto another human being. And that's not enough time, April, May, June. That's not enough time. And I latched on, and I could see, now, a year later, I pulled myself out of it by January, so it's not been a full year with them, but I was drowning emotionally. I'm looking for work. I'm landing a home. I got so much going on, and I'm hurting, and this person is just not helping. I don't mean not financial help, but emotional support. And it's just like, what about me and the drama and our lives? And I'm like, are you serious? So to pull away, I didn't. I can say that now, that I didn't. Just mama pass and let a year go by free. But I see
right.
it now, you know, with nothing in there, because I know, like I say, logically, that anyone would be in a low state. There's nothing. It's as mom and God. When you lose mom, it's just a space in between. And being in, and the other thing that was happening, my home and all of those things that happened, I know I was wallowing in sorrow. And I'm getting stronger. I want to do it. I know me differently than who I am now. I know me. I would get rid of something that wasn't good for me in a hot second. My fire was gone, you know, and I couldn't stand up for myself. And I'm being emotionally, verbally abused by a human being. And couldn't see. Wow. Go ahead, dear.
But, you know, I hear what you're saying, and there's like five steps, as I said, and I think you're from what I hear, is you're still grieving, and with your grieving, you're also bargaining, saying, oh, well, I did this, and that's part of the grieving process. Like, you bargain, like, I could have did this, I should have did this, or this is what's happening, and you're still going through your grieving process, and you have to allow yourself. I mean, I'm still going through the grieving process, and I've had my losses over several years ago. There's no time limit for anyone, but it's how you allow yourself to go through the process, which I'm getting towards the end of mine, but you have to go through a process, and the stages that you go through that kind of put you like where you are now.
Well, I believe the healing is there. The things that I've read and I do meditate, it's coming in baby steps. I absolutely knew that I didn't want to come through 2016 in the relationship, because the last part of 2015 was hell. And but I managed to work and get a home and build it up. And I said, I don't want this. And I was proud of myself to push it back, way back off of me. But you're right, I don't have to answer the calls. There's nothing on that end that's going to change. It's just time. It's just absence. It's not healing. We just don't see one another. And
Comfort,
I'm changing.
I
go ahead.
Comfort, I just want to say to you,
haven't experienced some of those things that you had three major life whammies that happened to you. Everything that you're saying and everything you're going through is not abnormal. It's not. So don't beat yourself up. You're vulnerable. You're open, like you said. You know, and somebody come in, that's what you felt you needed at the time, especially when you have so much going on, you know, you kind of latch on. So, but the fact that you're aware of it is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, it's huge that you're aware of it and you're not just blindly going in there. So you just sit, you know, you watch it, and like you said, you let it go now. You know, I think you said you're still getting the phone calls, but everything happens in time. You just keep paying attention and be easy with yourself. Just be easy, and as time goes on, you'll heal a little bit more. But nothing that you're saying is abnormal.
Thank you. That feels good. That helps.
Yeah, and that's the assurance that we're talking about, to give assurance that we understand what it is that you're going through. We understand why you went through some of the things that you went through, and we also understand that you have recognized the things that you're going through, and you know, too, what you need to remove and what you need to continue going forward in. And that's the whole, you get that kind of loving and caring, and we sit here and we give assurances to what you've experienced, how you're feeling about those experiences. There are some people who grieve forever. Their level of grieving changes as time goes on, but they never come out of grieving. For whatever reason, it could be that they're allowed to grieve alone, so they stay in that state a lot longer than they may or may not have. Some people get to a certain time and that's it. They kind of like check out for a period, and then all of a sudden, and then they're back to themselves a period down the road. Some people lock themselves away in rooms every day. Yeah. They come home and they lock up, and then they only come out into the world to do the things that they need in order to sustain them long enough to be able to go back into the room and lock themselves back up. People grieve in a multitude of ways. We're saying that you can heal through it. You're only going to heal through something when you're ready to heal through it. But what we're saying is, as a partner and as a friend, we should be capable, if we truly love those individuals, to be able to help give them that loving energy, show them that sense of care, make them feel safe, give them that assurance, help them in their relaxation, whatever that may be. If it's no more than saying, hey, I got this ticket for you to go to such and such because I know you really like it. Here's a ticket for you, and here's a ticket for whoever you want to take along with you. Something that you know for that moment of time that will be happening will give them some sense of relief, some sense of relaxation. Instead of holding their breath all the time, they finally get to breathe.
That's beautiful.
And that's what we're talking about, helping one another breathe. Because trauma will make you suffocate yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we want to cut back the weeds so that we can grow as individuals. We need to cut back the weeds, or the weeds will take over us and choke us.
Yeah. And I think I can say it out loud. I hear you all. I'm humbly grateful, and I thank you. I mean, that's what the validation is, for somebody to say, yes, you're normal. Yes, this is okay. No, don't answer the phone. That energy is not there. I know it, but it's good to hear it back to validate that I don't really want to be bothered with this person. Then I got it, because, like I said, intellectually you know, but emotionally you start to shake, and that's what a support of the line, and this is the part that holds the emotional part for me. And I thank you all. I thank you.
You're welcome. You know I'm always here for you, Comfort. We've known one another for a couple of years now.
Yeah, a few years.
Off and on. And I'm always a listening ear, and I'll always support you through whatever it is that you're going through. And I'm happy that you called in tonight.
I appreciate that. I've always wanted to. I think
and that I
wonderful.
Could,
and I
you know,
spread
have
the word.
Opened some friends up to you also.
I'm open to that. I think this is wonderful. I will spread the word in my circle, because we talk to one another and we're so guarded, and you don't want certain people to know your business and blah, blah, blah. But sometimes you need a little therapy, and you don't have to directly be on the couch. You can just listen. And just, there's no judgment. I feel like there's no judgment. There's nothing. I can just be myself and tell somebody what's going on. I've not said these words out loud to anyone because I think I can handle it. But I'm not handling it very well, and I know that. But I thank you all so much. And when you posted about how a partner is supposed to be supportive and giving and loving to you in the midst of the trauma you've been through and childhood stuff, and you come up to a point where your childhood stuff begins to work play out in your relationships, and like I said, I feel like I draw this person to me. My mother died of alcoholism. She was a deep alcoholic, and literally her body exploded, and I saw it happen. It was awful. This person that I dated was an alcoholic. It's an alcoholic. I don't date alcoholics. I've had a very tough life with that as a mom. But because she was gone, I know that alcoholics need love and compassion, blah, blah, blah. I pulled that type of person to me, and it was,
absolutely.
It was emotionally and verbally abusive. And it was normal and familiar because it was like my mom. I love my mom, drunk or not, whatever. But I could not believe this is what I've done. And to now, and I still feel like, oh, I should have talked to her. And now I know that's, she's not my mother, but I know that's what that is. I don't, she's an alcoholic. What am I doing with that when it took my mother away? And it shakes my core. It's where I can't. I was like, what are you doing?
I have, that is. I have a question for you.
Yes.
And this is a question. It's not coming from a place of judgment. Do you think that this person is, why you're so comfortable with this person is because it's a comfortable situation, it's familiar. Do you think it keeps you connected to your mom? Do you think it's that peace that won't allow you to let your mom go, so to speak?
I subconsciously, I think so. Alcoholic parents are mentally and verbally abusive and very, 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 very sorry tomorrow. And extremely loving and kissy kissy poo poo tomorrow, but tonight in the soup in the alcohol, they're the worst thing on the planet. And she passed. I'm an adult. I'm 43. We didn't live together, but that's my pattern of knowing her since I was 11. And how on planet Earth did I draw somebody to me who drinks? I don't, but I allowed it. And I know to be called out of my lane completely at the lowest form of verbal abuse. And then to say, I'm sorry tomorrow. And I just say, okay, and we write back in for months. I don't know. I don't want, I'm out of it. I've broken off and time has went by. But I'm going to sit with myself because I don't want this experience. I know if I don't get this lesson, I could never date an alcoholic. My mother died this way. That's what my brain knows for sure. I wouldn't want to pull this back into my life at all. It wasn't okay for my mother to be an alcoholic. She just was, and that's what I know. Our mother was normal to us until we became adults to read and see why she was like that. But that was a sense of normalty.
Have you ever forgiven your mom?
Wait. Go ahead again.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mika.
Have you ever forgiven your mom?
I have. In myself, I forgave her for the mom I wanted her to be. I felt like we had some closure, and it took about maybe 2 years ago. I'm 43. Okay, so at 40, after being a lesbian for the last 15, 20 years, I told her. She knew, but I never verbally said it, and I did. And she accepted it just fine, but after I relieved myself of that, I began to feel sorry for her. I don't think she wanted to be this. It just got her. The alcohol had her. I think she wanted to let it go. So I believe I forgave her. Poor thing that she went through this in her life.
Guy, can I get you for a minute or so to address how easy it is when we get into a state, a trauma, or when we go through a traumatic experience to go to what we know, to go to what is comfortable,
right,
to go to what is natural to us so that comfort can also know that that's normal, what she did.
It is normal. And what happens too on an energetic level, you create that space. That's exactly why you pulled her in, because of the energy of your mom and how strong that was. You know, you're grieving her. That energy is around you. And that's exactly what you pulled in. It happens all the time. And if you're not aware of energy and how it works, you're not going to pay attention to it. But when you do start looking at things that way and see what was coming to you, you'll definitely see the connection. You know, you pull in where you are. That's what you pull into your life, exactly where you are. And so I still say I applaud you for being aware, just being aware of that, because a lot of people are not. A lot of people are not, because it's only when you're aware of it can you change it.
Right.
So and that's what you can do now. That's what you've done. You've let her go. But, you know, just being aware that that's what it is, that energy was around you, still around you a bit. And you focus on you and pulling yourself up and out of that space into a new energetic level, you'll start bringing in people, you know, from a higher level that's more suitable to you. But it's everything about awareness, and nothing, like I said before, is unusual that you're feeling or that you did. It's very normal. And the awareness, again, is awesome. Yeah.
So we're getting close to the end of the show. And again, we were at Meeting in Love as Deeply as You've Met Yourself. Love and heal through your trauma. I want to give a moment to all of my co-hosts to give supporting words. So let's start with our special guest co-host tonight. Deb, can you give us some words to part on?
Well, I just, you know, want everyone, as we were saying earlier, especially Guy, you know, take time for yourself. You know, sometimes you have to just sit and be still and just love yourself. And that's pretty much, you know, once you start loving yourself, then that's going to show in everything that you do. And that's pretty much a blessing to everyone. That's pretty much all I have.
Janet?
I'm just going to say that I think it's very important that in any situation, any type of trauma situation, whatever, I think it's very important that we do take that time to feel, to deal, and then to heal. Very important.
Sky?
I want to read that entire quote that I mentioned earlier, and it says, "Relationships are laboratories of the spirit. They are hospitals of the soul. They are the places where the wounds that we hold will be brought up, because that's the only way they can be healed." And that comes from Marianne Williamson. So we started off talking about committed relationships, and this is the environment we have to create in these relationships for each other to be vulnerable so that we can heal individually.
Hey, Michelle?
I just would like to leave everyone with a personal experience for myself. I lived in a state of trauma for years, and one day I just woke up and chose to live a certain type of way differently. And I understand everything is a process, but also everything is a choice. It was for me. So I just challenge everyone to wake up and try to choose to live and be differently than yesterday.
And this is Minister Dupree. First, I want to say thank you for everyone who dialed in tonight. It's always a pleasure to have you guys call in, whether you're talking or just sitting in to listen. Again, I want to thank my co-host for coming in and my special guest co-host. Love you guys. Love you to pieces. What I want to leave you with tonight is this. Love is almost like a form of nourishment that touches each and every essence of who we are. And just like we need to eat good foods and healthy foods and make sure that we drink water and all of that stuff, we have to make sure that we're willing to accept love that's being given out there to us, the good kind, the real good kind. Don't splurge on your love. Go for the top love. Get that top shelf love, because that's the good love. And you want to continue to eat on it so that you can edify your spirit, you can edify your soul, and so that you can grow, not only as an individual, but as a couple. And as we continue to remember why we are in relationships and why we commune with one another, which is purely, just simply, to love one another, to love upon one another, then we can know what it is to be at one with yourself so that you can be one with someone else. I wish you all great blessings. I wish you all safe travel if you have to go and drive somewhere tonight. And I wish you all love. Have a great night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.